Accession number 5868, Horton Monday, part 48.
Then, the army then was mainly all scruffs, as you might put it. Now today they tell me you've got to have a degree to get in.
You have in some areas, yeah.
Yeah, almost, you can't go in if you've had a conviction or anything like that. But blimey, if you went to court for anything in them days, you didn't want to go in, they sent you in. In fact, the kids, they used to send to training ships down on the Thames.
It's just the reverse. So they were a pretty rough crowd, were they?
Well, it was noted for it, yes. There were some decent chaps that wanted a career and that, but they were prepared to accept anybody then, but not today.
And what sort of entertainment did the people of Wolverton and Bradwell lay on for these soldiers?
None at all. No, I don't remember them putting anything on. No. Picture Palace had just opened. That's it, there was a Picture Palace. That had just opened then. That opened, I think, about 1911. But this was 1913. No, I can't remember anything put on, no.
They talked about something about a smoking concert, whatever that is. What's a smoking concert?
Well, it's an ordinary concert, you know, sing-song then. Like, what you'd call a club concert then, stage and get different turns.
Why do they call it a smoking
concert? I never know why, but they always used to call them smoking concerts. Because you could smoke, I expect, but I don't know. But that was the sort of the way you'd say today they call them a disco, don't they?
I see.
Yeah, something like that.
So I understand that quite a few Wolverton families invited people home.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, that was nothing fresh, that wasn't that. You know, that's, as I say, that you could go up into their camps. Well, now, if you went up there and you perhaps, some of them did, of course they did, they perhaps got friendly with a soldier there and tell the tale, you know, being away from home and all like that, nice young chap, and they'd say, well, would you like to come round to tea weekend and or something like that, you know, all that did happen, yes. Oh, yeah. But wherever it was, when they were on manoeuvres and went off, marching out in column, you couldn't break a column, you know, to go across the road. If you was that side the road, you know, where the shops are along the front at Wolverton, because you know when the whistle went, you had to be in, and they slammed the doors before the whistle had finished blowing, didn't they? Always. The doors of the gates of the works. But if you was the other side the road, and the column, a brigade, which would be 4,000 troops, a brigade come along, and you were that side the road, and the first part of the column had gone by, you couldn't get across that road, you know. I wouldn't let you cross, not in between one battalion and the next. All other was space, and the colonel of each regiment always had a horseback, you see. Rode horse, and the infantry marched behind. The captain always horseback. And if he see anybody try to walk across that road in between the two companies, he'd lean over with his whip and knock you back. Yeah. You were locked out then for a quarter of an hour, it was.
I've got that in there.
That was a quarter of an hour.
One of the things that is said in the newspaper reports at that time was that quite a few people took days off work to go and see them in action. Is that
possible? That's possible, young chap, might, yeah. Quite possible. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. But if you were locked out above a quarter of an hour, you couldn't get in the work, so you had to stop out if a column went along. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, it used to fetch the people out, you know, to watch them go along. Mm-hmm. Public, the women and that come out their houses and see them because they wasn't here all that long.
This was the occasion when Alf Meacham's mother ran off, wasn't it? That she went off with some bloke from one of the Scottish regiments, didn't she?
Alf Meacham's mother, yeah, that's Arthur Meacham's brother's wife.
Sorry, am I talking about?
Yeah,
Alfred Meacham, that's right, yeah.
Alf, yeah. Well, yeah, this woman you're talking about, Madge, isn't it?
Yeah, Madge, yeah.
Well, that was Arthur Meacham's daughter.
That's right, yeah.
Well, this, the woman she's talking about, but we're her aunt.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. That'd be Alf, I think, Alf.
Alf's mother.
Alf's mother. Mm-hmm. Well, Alf with a, yeah, I think she fouled up with one of them. Some of that, but I can't remember the details. No. Oh, yeah. Yes, the old tram, because you've got pictures of that, naturally. That was a laugh, you know, where the overhanging trees, there were a bunch of these soldiers coming back from Stratford drunk. They climbed on top. And going under the trees, they were swept right off on the road at the back. You heard about that, didn't you?
No.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, one Saturday night, they was got drunk in the, you know, the old tram. That was double-decker, wasn't it, you know?
Yeah.
Flat top, and then all open underneath the top. And these, one or two of these young soldiers got on top. Well, along the old road between Wolverton and Stratford, there used to be some big old elm trees hang over. Well, then at times, the top of the tram used to brush under them. Well, one Saturday night, there were some of these young chaps, how many I don't know. But anyway, they got on, tram went underneath, and they got slid off back on the road. Yeah.
They were actually up on the roof.
On the roof, climbed on the roof of the old tram, old flat top tram, yeah.
I again read in the newspaper that one young woman was actually knocked down. She was on a.
Yeah.
She was actually knocked down and killed or something while they were there. A lady called Miss Goodwin, I don't know what her. Or Godwin or something.
By the tram?
No, it was killed by a.
One of the.
Yeah, by a motorbike or something, that one of the soldiers was driving or something.
Oh, no, I can't remember it, no. But there must have been, I don't remember any motorised vehicles, not with the troops.
No, I think it was just motorbikes, I think.
Yeah, because all the transport was horse-drawn, all the artillery, guns and all that was all horse-drawn because... You see, the leaders of the guns and that, they was all horseback then. The drivers was on horses. Yeah. Same as the Germans was that time. Yeah.
That's, of course, quite a stir. It's funny, really, it coming just a year before the
Yes,
thing.
It was, wasn't it? How strange.
The other thing I'd love to get hold of is, that, again, the newspaper reports that they had a church parade one Sunday, and Canon Harnett...
Oh, I remember him, yeah. Sermon, he christened my daughter.
His sermon was on war.
Yeah.
And I'd love to get hold of a copy of that sermon.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I don't know where you'd get it, I'm sure.
I think it'd be probably impossible, I doubt whether they...
Yes, well, he christened my daughter. Yeah. Ah, now then, let me think. I told you he rang me up last night, didn't I? Mm-hmm. And,
Tell me this, because I haven't heard this.
Well, I forgot to tell
you
that.
Yeah.
Are you right?
Yeah, I'm right, yeah.
Yes, well, just the night before we went up, you see, before we went up for the attack, the night before we'd had a... They gave us a good tea.
What do you mean by good tea?
Well, a top tea such as meat and bread and that, a proper tea instead of the old, just a biscuit or whatever it is. But anyway, they gave us a good tea and a mug of tea with rum in it and all. That was before we went up. And then we was told, get our kit bags, put all the clothes in the kit bag. That was your great coat, see? All you'd got to have left was your battle dress, what they call battle dress. Well, everything else was packed into your kit bag, your cap, your great coat, and anything that you wanted left behind. That was all packed away, and then you was told, write a letter home now, tell them what you want to tell them, except that you're going over the top. See? And described all that. Well, now, that was the sort of thing that she took notice of, you see, in detail.
Can you remember what you actually wrote in that letter home? What sort of things would you say?
I'm sure I can't remember now, but it was an just ordinary letter to my mother, you know, that in any case, I shouldn't have wrote and said I'm going in a battle tomorrow morning. That's natural. When you write to your mother, you don't want to upset her. It's a sort of a farewell letter. I'm getting on very well, you know, and I've met so-and-so, Arthur Parker, and we're doing very well, and I'm having plenty of food and nice and comfy. You write a letter at home then. I should say 90% of it did, same as I did others. You try and write a cheerful letter home. You don't write and say, oh, hell, I'm going in a battle tomorrow, and I'm frightened to death. You wouldn't dream of that, or shouldn't do then. No, you try and write cheerful, cheer them up at home, and how's so-and-so getting on? When you write back, let me know, and that type of letter. Oh, that's the letter you wrote home.
You didn't actually ever write home saying, you know, if ever I should die type of thing. You never wrote that type of thing?
No. No, but you always had to put that, your next of kin, in your pay book. Always had to write that. Religion and next of kin. Always in your pay book. C of E and my mother I used to write on her. But that's all you had to put on your pay book, and that was your will.
Had you had this cup of tea and rum before you went, before you wrote the letter, or afterwards?
I don't know now. I think it was before.
Well, I'm wondering.
Yes, I remember before. It'd been the afternoon when we were told to pack a kit up and all that, you know. Get everything all ready. Well, when...
you didn't feel sort of tiddly when you actually went over?
No. Oh, you'd got to stand up all night after that. I told you we had some rum early in the hours of the morning, next morning.
Oh, that's what I meant. You know, when you actually had the rum in the early hours of the morning, were you sort of a bit drunk when you went over or not?
No. No, I can't remember it. No, I don't think anyone were drunk. I'm sure they wasn't. Mm. All you'd done, you had a warm glow. Mm. I'll put it that way. I should say the proper word to use would... You had a glow of confidence. I think that would sum the lot up. Not drunk, not half drunk or anything, but just a sort of a feeling of confidence with every capability.
Did you have any sort of superstitions at all when you were in the trenches?
No, but the main thing I did have, as I told you, was the belief in what is to be will be. I had that belief just before I got wounded the first time. And that gave me so much confidence that I seemed to have no fear after that. Not frightened. I had a touch of terror now and again, but not frightened. No.
Well, no, when I meant superstitions, I mean, there was this thing about not lighting a match, using a match three times.
Oh, no. No, I can't think of any of that, no. No, I can't. Blowed if I can. And yet there was quite a lot of people like that, weren't there? But I didn't know anyone that did.
You didn't... light a cigarette with a match.
One off of a match. That was a joke. Yes. You know, like if anybody lit a match with a third one in them days, well, it's the same today. Third one, you might say, oh, blimey, my luck's out. You know, just casually, but you'd never give a second thought of it. Wouldn't dream of it. You being the third one. No, I never remember anyone.
Was there a lot of sort of fun and humour when you were in the front line or not?
Yes, oh blimey, yeah. Didn't I tell you on that day about them air parcel with Holmes, Sid Carroll and Fatty Odle and them, Joe Scragg? No. Oh no, I did. You had it.
I can't remember that one.
I'm sure I did. They were on them first two I made. I know they was. What you had, you know I done all them tapes, yes, and then later I done
the
two.
Other two. Yeah,
I started five, didn't I? This yes, after it was for the last year, beginning of last year.
Well, what was the parcel? I can't remember.
Of course it was when I shared a meeting, and then. When all come to all, old Sid Carroll lived opposite me at Bradley. When I shared the cake and all the goodies out in the parcel, chocolate and fags, share them out between Joe Scragg, Fatty Odle, and old Sid Carroll and myself. And there were two balaclava helmets in. Don't you remember? You know what you have over your head? Mm. Tuck in these balaclava helmets.
Yeah.
Woolen, khaki woolen ones. I'd got two in the parcel, see? And they brought them up to the trenches, you see, your parcel brought them up at night because you couldn't get in and out in the daytime. And either of us had a parcel, we used to say, oh, well, old Joe Scragg's got a parcel, let's go along, see him, we'd go along the trench and I'd sort of have a bit of a share out, just the four of us. And on this occasion, I had a blooming great big one. Oh, well. And then when I'd, you know, cut this cake up and had a bit of each and some odds and ends and fags and so on, I said, blimey, I said, I've got two balaclava helmets. I said, I don't want two of them. So I said, anybody want to buy one? So Fatty Odle says, yeah, he says, I'll buy one of them. Say how much you want for it. I says, oh, give us a dollar. So he give me a dollar for this, five bob. And when we'd finished, I read the letter from my mother, and she said, I hope you'll enjoy the parcels and the balaclava helmet. So keep you and Sid warm, because Sid's mum and me are put together and made a big parcel. And I'd give his helmet away. So flogged it. Yeah. Oh, well. So I said to old Fatty, oh, blimey, Fatty, I said, give it me back. He said, no bloody fear, he said. I ain't giving you that back. I said, oh, you are. Because it's only leg pulling, so because I give him his five bob back. Give it old Sid. Now, there's a climax of that tale. Oh, well, you got your doodar on.
Yeah,
yeah. At night, well, me and old Sid got these helmets on that were lovely and warm, you know, and the old tin hat on top. We got it on and I said, oh, blimey, I said, when old Birchall comes along, Captain Birchall, he was our captain. I said, when he comes along, I said, he'd be as jealous as hell. So it was in the early hours of the morning, it were cold, and I'd got this helmet on, balaclava. Old Birchall come along the trench, he looked at me. He said, take that bloody thing off your head. I said, why? Take it off, he said. He says, you've got that on, he said, a German can put his head over the trench and tap you on the shoulder and you won't know he's there. He said, take it off, he said, oh, well. And I never did wear it again. No, I sent it home. Well, in fact, I sent it home. And years later, out in the old barn, in my old kit bag, I found it at the bottom of that old moth-eaten. Hey, you wouldn't think of that, would you? Little tales like
but
that.
But those pictures, those cartoons, also Captain Baines.
Oh, yeah.
The old Bill was always wearing a balaclava helmet.
I know he was, always, wasn't he? Yeah, of course he was. But old Virgil stopped us. Stop me.
Tell me more about Captain Boucher, because you mentioned him several times. And you...
He's...
How old was he, for a start?
Well, now, should I have a rough guess? I'm only going by appearances and what I remember how he looked like. And I should say if he were 35 to 40, that's a rough guess. That's the appearance he gave me. Might have been 40. Yeah. Perhaps 40, yeah. Because he was a millionaire, you knew that. They were a millionaire family, the Birchall family.
Whereabouts did they come from?
I don't know. Old Joe Scragg touched all right there, you know. Silly fool. After the war, Birchall's sister sent him a cheque for £100. Well, £100 were worth 10,000 today, as the saying is, wasn't it? Cheque for £100 and invited him to go down and see him. And old Joe never went. If he'd have went, he'd have been all right.
Joe was his Batman, wasn't he?
He was Birchall's Batman. Yeah. Now, I don't know whether you know this or not. It might be a little of information to you if you don't know. In England, you had your band, your regimental band, see? Mm. And your bugle band, infantry. Well, now, bandsmen and bugle band... When they go on active service, that's all packed away, right? They don't go with you. And, well, at least they're not used, put it that way. Well, all those people then are split up as batmen and stretcher bearers. That's what they use. What they use them for. So, well, old Joe Scragg were a bugler. Fatty O'Dell was a stretcher bearer, and he was one of them, you know, them big farting instrument, boom, 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 them big ones, yeah. Oh yes, they use them for batmen and stretcher bearers.
And what did they have to do with the batmen?
Well, look after the officer in every way. Clean his shoes or clean his buttons, if that's light infantry or other regiment. And get his shaving water and get his washing water. And it's a servant job. It's similar to what you might call an old-fashioned footman, don't they call him, in these big houses?
Butler.
No, butler looks after the food and the organisation.
Manservant.
Or they used to call them
valet,
yeah, but they used to, if you went in the big house, they used to call them footman, the footman. They used to, you know, press the clothes, clean the clothes, or wash his shirt, you know, odd jobs there.
So how did Joe get his DCM then?
Okay, oh, Birchall. I told you what Birchall told me, that I should have been at a court-martial and shot if he'd have reported me.
Yes.
I told you about that.
Yeah.
I told you what he told me then when he gave me a dressing down. He says, if it's your brother, he said. When I told him, I explained how I run out to see my old mate, I said. He said, it don't matter, he said, if it's your brother. He says, you're not supposed to bother about him, he said. The stretcher bearers to look after wounded. So that's not your job, he said. Your job is to fight, never mind about them. He said, if your brother falls, let him stop. He said, you mustn't interfere. It's your job to keep on fighting. And then there I told him on them towers in that coward, didn't I? Coward and... I don't believe in it, and I don't know. Well, what happened then? Poor old Birchall. Give me a dressing down like that. Old Joe Scragg was his servant, and when they went over the top on the Somme, Birchall got it. Old Joe Scragg, being his servant and that, picked him up and carried him back into the trench, see? Carried him back out of it all, as the saying is. Now then, if old Joe Scrag had done what Birchall told me I'd got to do, he'd have left Birchall lying there, wouldn't he? And yet old Joe Scrag had the DCM-4 and Birchall had the DSO. They were both next to the VC, those two medals, you know, one for a soldier and one for officer.
So what happened to Birchall? He was...
He died of wounds.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Shortly afterwards?
Yes, he died a bit later, he died of wounds. Yeah.
Well, that same day?
I don't know. Mm. No, I don't know when. No, he died of wounds, Captain Birchall. But he was a very brave man, I'll give him that. Yes. My old mate, R.C. Cowie, used to hate the sight of him.
Why?
Because he kept giving me an MCB and Pactrel and one bloody thing another through acting a fool. He used to say, oh, bloody. But well, it was the other way of me. He used to amuse me.
He was a regular officer, though, was he?
No, he was a regular territorial officer. He was officer in the territorials before the war. Yes, he was. I've seen him do things that were really brave. Yeah.
Well, what's...
I've seen him go over the top to find out what was... wander out halfway across no man's land. Where's it? Where was it? 100 yards apart. I've seen him go over there at one end where the trench branched out towards their lines. One night I was there and I stood at the end. I see him go along and get over the top at the end and appear in a bait. Yeah.
What were the sort of the first and second lieutenants like?
They were very good, but they were all civilians. See, they weren't in the army, a lot of them before the war. In the wasn't even in the terriers, some of them, some were. Little Pinky Brown, as I told you about, he was ever so nice chap. In fact, he lived right through the war. I think he ended up a colonel. Any road, he always used to send a message to me right up to recent years at the reunion at Aylesbury, even after I retired. But they tell me now he's died this last year or two. Yeah, he used to send a message to me because it was him as... He carried me in when I was wounded, you see. It was him, Pinky Brown. Oh, yeah, he was a brave bloke, he was.
Did they lead from the front, these people, the younger officers? Did they, you know, when you went over the top, did they always...
Oh, I never see them. No. When you went over, you see it's dark. You go over at daybreak, well, that's not light then.